one thing I've learned after all these years, you're gonna save yourself a whole lot of tears. Don't try to figure out who was wrong and who was right. Got to move along, baby. Let's ride. You got to roll with the punches. Well, you got to go with the flow.
Yeah, you got to roll with the punches. Hey, everybody, your old friend Mike Houlihan with Hibernian Radio. Welcome back to the show. So glad you guys are listening. This is our fifth show into the new year, and we're real excited about it. I just need to take a moment and let everybody catch up what Hibernian Radio is all about. It's an offshoot of Hibernian Transmedia, which is our little media company, 501c3, not-for-profit public charity dedicated to the preservation and the promotion of Irish and Irish American culture. So one of the things we've discovered is Irish mythology and how to get in touch with your past and your present and your future as an Irishman in Chicago. So I feel that one of the things we have to do to connect with that is all we have to do to meet who are our present-day Irish mythological warriors is look to our Irish police, firefighters, and paramedics. These are the heroes of our time, fighting in a war that never ends, risking their lives for the safety and well-being of us and our families. So that's what this new show, Hibernian Radio, is going to do. We're going to uncover the oral history and stories of our mythological Irish heroes and warriors. And we have one with us tonight, the great Pat Johnson. Pat, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Hooli. Happy to be here.
Oh, it's great to have you back. Pat was on the Skinny and Hooli show about a year ago, I think.
Right,
it
about
was.
Exactly a yeah. year ago.
Now, Pat, you didn't grow up in Chicago, right?
No, I did not.
Where are you from?
I was born in Knoxville, Tennessee.
Knoxville?
Yeah.
Okay.
But my mom and dad are from Chicago.
Ah.
And they grew up here, and my grandparents. So we moved around when I was growing up. I was born in Tennessee and lived there till fifth grade, and then I lived in Northern Virginia for a few years outside of D.C.
Right.
And then we moved to...
Where in Northern Virginia were you?
A place called Centerville, which is in Fairfax County. It's like, you know, suburban D.C.
Yeah. Well, I've been to Alexandria.
Yeah, not too far.
It's lovely. Yeah.
It is. It's, that's a really built-up area now.
Yeah.
This was in the 80s, and it was getting built up then. But
I met my wife at the Folger Shakespeare Theater in 1976 in Washington, D.C.
Yeah.
And we were in All's Well That Ends Well. Isn't that perfect?
I love D.C., and I love that whole area.
Remember the Tune In on Capitol Hill? That was our hangout.
Well, I wasn't hanging out of places like that.
It's a little dive bar on Capitol.
I was in like fifth and sixth grade.
All right. Well, it still holds a special place in my heart.
Yeah.
So how old were you when you came to Chicago?
I was going into eighth grade.
Ah, okay.
So I started eighth grade.
Where'd you go to high school?
Marist.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
With Jerry Joyce?
I did, yeah.
Maybe the next mayor of Chicago. Yeah. He's got commercials out now. Have you seen them?
I have.
They're pretty good.
Yeah.
All right, so, and did you grow right out of college? Did you go into the police force?
Yeah, pretty
Pat is a Chicago detective specializing in gang crimes, am I right?
Well, maybe at one time. I'm in the Fugitive Apprehension Unit now.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Are you working with the U.S. Marshal's office?
Some.
Oh, my niece's husband was with the Marshal's office for years.
Yeah.
He's retired now, Jim Smith. Do you know Smitty?
Sure, I know.
Do you?
Yeah, I do. I know.
Okay.
I know Jim.
Good guy.
Great guy.
So you're like tracking down fugitives.
Yeah, and what my assignment in that fugitive unit is supposed to be kind of cold case stuff. So I work on some older cases.
So you go and get out the old file and say, where
yeah,
did this
read
guy
a lot
disappear?
Read a lot of old files, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then, you know, a lot of those things, too, are, you know, Chicago's such a busy place, and the police department's so busy, and so many cases come through, and that it's not that for lack of trying that maybe a case wasn't cleared or a guy wasn't caught at one time years ago. It was just they didn't have the same kind of resources.
They didn't have the resources, yeah. And now they got computers and all that stuff, and
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, what we have at our fingertips today compared to a different generation is really amazing, you know. Like, my dad was an FBI agent.
Oh, was he really?
He was. And he will say stuff about, you know, having to drive to the county jail where a guy had been booked to get a copy of the Polaroid photo they took. So they have a picture of the guy before they go looking for him. Like, nah, Dad, somebody just texted it to me on my phone, you know.
Yeah. Do you ever watch Forensic Files?
Yeah, that's a good
one. Oh, that's my favorite
show. My wife's not too...
My wife is exactly...
She likes that show. She doesn't get too into cop anything. Movies, shows, me talking, anything. But she likes Forensic Files.
Well, because it's so weird and the way they find these guys, you know, like...
Yeah.
They found his booger from third grade, and that was how, you know, it's like, that's how they found him. It's like, holy cow.
She may be trying to figure out how to get away with something, too.
Yeah. So when did you switch to that in the fugitive program?
I've been there about 2 years, yeah.
That's a good assignment, I would think, right?
Yeah, I enjoy it.
Nobody's shooting at you.
Well, not yet.
Now, you did
take... Don't talk about a no-hitter, you know.
You don't want to jinx it. Right. Yeah. Well, you've already taken your bullet for the city of Chicago.
Hopefully just that one.
That was 2007.
That's right. Yeah.
And you got hurt pretty bad. You know, we had Eileen Guest on the show a couple weeks ago. And
yeah.
She said she was at the hospital the night they brought you in.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah.
You were working in gang crimes then.
Well, I was a detective at 51st and Wentworth then, what they used to call Area 1.
Oh, yeah.
Now they call Area Central. But we were working on a couple of different things. And the night I got shot, we were got out on some gang members that we knew, you know, engaged them on foot.
The Gangster's Disciples, I believe, was the group.
That's right.
They're still around, right?
They are still around.
You know what? I was reading...
pretty fractioned.
I looked up your case, and they were fighting with the Black Peystone Nation, which surprised me that they're still around.
They are still around. And, you know, I spent a lot of my career, and my whole, you know, most of my career as a patrolman in the 9th District, which was at 35th and Low back then.
Oh, sure.
But that extended all the way to Garfield Boulevard. And a lot of that area south of, like, 49th Street, the Viaduct, 49th, south to the Garfield, over east was all Black Peystones.
Yeah.
And, they were a big... When I first started in that district, very late 96, you know, in early 97, that was... they were pretty strong and pretty organized. And through the years, they got...
You know,
splintered
when I was in high, I went to Mount Carmel and graduated in 67. Now they were the Blackstone Rangers in those days. And there was a guy, Jeff Fort, who was their leader, who wound up going to jail. But I think it was from jail that he started. Well, it was also the Ilrucans was part of it, too, right?
Well, they started calling themselves. It's the same.
They got into a 60s thing and said, we can get grants.
That's what he wore
for being a gang.
His Vietnamese hat.
Yeah. I have an old friend. A brother of Skinny who was a police officer, but a guy I played football with at Carmel was Richie Kulovitz.
Okay,
you remember him? He was a Chicago police officer. Big, tough guy. He played basketball and football at Carmel. And John Sheehan was telling me, you know, I saw Richie Kulovitz slap. Can I say that on the radio? Jeff Fort. And I said to Johnny Vegas, what were you doing while this happened? He said, pointing a shotgun at his head. Which I love. But Jeff Fort, is he still alive? He die in jail or anything?
No, as far as I know, he's still alive.
Bad dude.
In prison.
Yeah, he was. He went to prison for life or whatever.
Well, you know, a lot of the there's a bunch of fugitive teams. There's, I think, about maybe five or six different teams in the fugitive unit.
Yeah.
A lot of them are younger guys that are getting out there and really getting after it every day.
Yeah.
And they are getting into some kind of, tough situations. And they've been in some, there's been some shootings and exchanges of gunfire of guys in that unit looking for fugitives. Because they're looking for not just, somebody that...
Old guys.
Right. Yeah. But, they're looking for some very bad guys. And it's the focus of the unit is on violent crime fugitives. So
they
get into some bad stuff.
Violent crime fugitives.
Yeah, so not it's those. But I, I'm
a
little
partner?
More. No, I don't. And I work, being an older guy, kind of an elder statesman in the unit.
Yeah.
I'm working a little more methodically. I don't go rushing into anything. Hula.
Yeah.
So
well, you've learned.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's true.
And so what's your day like?
It can be different. I don't do the exact same thing every day,
right.
But I spend a couple of days a week. I'm in the office doing a lot of research, really.
Yeah.
And pulling old files
and
reading stuff, doing lots of stuff on the computer.
Yeah.
Making phone calls. Then, I kind of mix it up. I try to have a few days in the office, a few days on the street. So...
Do you still have sources out on the street?
I do.
Yeah.
It's funny. I'm a relationship guy, like a lot of guys have informants through the years that they use and they move on and maybe they use on one case or one thing.
Right.
I don't know. I've had, I have some of the same friends I've had for a long time and I have a couple of the same informants I've had for years and years and years.
Yeah.
It's funny. You have, it's a very unique kind of relationship. But
The other night I was watching an old William Friedkin movie, To Live and Die in L.A.
Oh, yeah,
Remember that movie?
Yeah, I do remember that.
Oh, it's great. And I hadn't seen it in years.
And
Bill Peterson.
Yeah.
Bill Peterson and John Pankow, who was a Chicago guy whose brother is in the group Chicago. But
I did not know that.
It's very 80s, and the music. And this was pre-Miami Vice, but really a great film.
Yeah.
And of course, Friedkin is such a great director and everything. But he's got different sources. One source is a very sexy blonde.
Yeah. I remember actually talking my mom and let me rent To Live and Die in L.A., and I don't know, I might have been about 11.
Yes, there was some naughty bits in there.
it's appropriate.
Oh, the music was terrific and everything, And Friedkin makes a good cop movie.
Yeah.
Now, speaking of cop movie, now you're also a writer.
Well, I write.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sporadic. I always am writing, but I'm only doing something with it once in a while.
I read something of yours the other day. It was only like four or five sentences. Oh, it was about the kids who found the grasshopper. Remember that?
What?
Yeah, it's like you and your brother, and they.
Oh yeah, 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 yeah.
And they
yeah,
find
yeah,
that
the,
was it
the
a grasshopper?
The two-headed bumblebee.
Yeah, the two-headed bumblebee.
Right, right.
And your daughter drew a picture.
She illustrated
it. Yeah.
Yeah, that got published.
That's a hell of a story.
Yeah.
And it's only like 200
words.
Well,
that actually is a, that's one of, these literary journals that you can submit to, but it's published on a postcard. So you have to.
Oh, so you got to keep it
under
tight.
150 words.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you, I like that medium of writing because you can. It really makes you eliminate extra words.
Yeah.
Obviously. But it was neat. And then I...
Yeah, a great little story.
Yeah. And then I asked my daughter, can you draw a picture of a two-headed bee?
And she that's part of it.
Sketched it out while she was watching TV. And
yeah.
That was
she's
it.
She's a good artist.
She is.
Yeah.
Great. Yeah, she's very talented.
What are you working on now? Do you have a novel or anything, or just short stories?
You know, I've written a lot of stories I haven't done anything with. And like I said, I'm pretty kind of sporadic. Once in a while, I'll do something with something. Like that thing I submitted when she did the artwork for it. And, you know, I won a contest writing thing like 10 years ago and thought I was going to really start writing a lot. And
yeah.
I did write a lot, but just kind of put it away. I didn't do anything with it. And so I've been submitting some stuff here and there, and you know how that game goes. I get rejected here and there. once maybe one out of every 10 things gets through somewhere.
That's pretty good.
Yeah. And actually, I've heard that's actually pretty good.
So, yeah. Are you right? But you don't write mostly crime stuff or cop stuff.
No. I mean, I have certainly written some kind of memoir type stuff about. You know, it has to do with police work here and there, but I haven't, you know, really done anything with that stuff. But, you know, and a lot of my cop stories, too, are not like real, you know, guns in action kind of stories. They're just, you know, it's such a unique job, and you meet
people.
You meet people, and you meet, and I've always been interested in people and their stories, and you meet people, and I can sit and talk to somebody for hours. And you know, last summer, I had a partner I was working with, and it was a cold case.
A cold case?
Yeah, it was a cold case. We went to an interview a guy. I won't get too into specifics of it, but basically, he had been a former neighbor of somebody, like a victim of a crime from a long, long time ago, in '70s, like early
'70s. In the '70s,
yeah. And great guy. You know, upper 80s. Real talkative, though. And we were sitting in his living room talking to him and his wife. I think it was his second or third wife, and she was younger. And she leaves to go to the store she lets us in, gets us situated, talking to him, having a cup of coffee in the living room. And she leaves to go to the store, and she's running errands all day. She comes back, and we're still sitting there talking to him. And he's telling crazy stories about when he grew up in Georgia and drove a logging truck or something. She says, "What are you still doing here?" And they don't want to hear all your stupid old stories about nothing. I said, "No, we do. I love it. I love, you know, hearing people's stories." And that's why I think I always liked being a cop. That's why I like being a detective.
Yeah. You get their
story.
And
it's funny. I was taking tons and tons of notes. And my partner said, "You know, what the hell were you writing down that whole time?" Like, he only talked about the case for like a little bit of that time.
The rest
of
it was.
I said, I just wanted to remember all that stuff.
Color.
I loved it.
Yeah. Yeah.
But. You know.
Many years you got on the force?
I had 22 in July, so 22 and a half.
Okay.
Who's counting, you know?
And do you see at some point just hanging it up and writing full time?
I see at some point hanging it up, I think. But, I don't know that I'll ever be writing full time. I'll be doing something else full time maybe.
Okay.
But I like writing, and I'd like to always keep doing it, you know, on the side. I think it's tough to make a living doing that. As you know, a life in the
arts,
right?
It's a hard dollar.
Right.
It is a hard dollar, my friend.
Yeah.
But there's nobody breathing down your neck.
Yeah.
There's nobody telling you what to do. That's what I like about it.
Yeah.
I have a problem with authority. Officer. But, you know, keep at it. Because it is, you know.
Yeah, I appreciate it.
I'm sure you have some incredible stories to tell. You've met the people you've met and everything.
Yeah, and that's why. And it's funny. I didn't go. You know, obviously didn't go into police work to get a bunch of stories, but it's just true. I never wanted to be, you know, in an office job or you know, at a desk. I always liked being on the street and meeting people and talking to people. That's why I still enjoy the job.
And now, you wrote a story, actually, about the night you got shot. I think it was on WBEZ. You went to...
Yeah.
First of all, you were pretty messed up.
Yeah,
you had to have a colostomy bag. And
I was hurt.
And how long were you... You were, you know...
I was off work almost a year. I don't...
Okay.
You know, in the police department, you can be off... You hit a year for one injury, and then if you're going to go past that, you go on to disability.
Yeah.
And I was trying to avoid having to go on to disability. Sure. And, you know, my goal back then was to be able to make it back. Make it back to full duty.
And you
make
still have fragments
street.
Of the bullet in you, right?
Yeah.
No, so anyway, I just read this thing, and it was terrific. But you're coming back, and you, your son was just a little toddler.
Yeah, yeah.
And you and your wife, I don't know if your other kid, went to the memorial
service.
Oh,
the candlelight vigil.
Yeah, for the police officers who had been killed in the line of duty.
Yep.
And you're there, and it's a nice summer night, and everything is great, and all of a sudden they do the 21-gun salute.
Yeah.
And the sound of the rifles crackling in the night brought you right back to laying on an empty lot with a cold broken glass. And I thought that was terrific, just the way you told that story.
Well, thanks, Mike. And that was that story and what I wrote down, that I think I wrote that night after we got home. But
yeah,
that was really only a couple of months after the shooting, you know, and I was just starting to be up and around a little. And we went down. It was kind of I had not been making it out to too many things, but we did. We took my son down to that night. It was really only a few months after the shooting. And, it was...
like you had a flashback.
Well, it was like hearing the first time you hear a...
Gunfire.
Gunshot since the last time you'd heard a gunshot. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But, yeah. So, but, you know, I throughout that whole time, I always wanted to prove to myself that I could get back.
Right.
That was psychologically important to me. I know I'm not saying anything against anybody that doesn't come back when they get hurt.
Right.
Everybody has their own reasons why they do anything. And I know there's a lot of guys that have made it back from serious injuries, and some guys don't come back, and they're unable to. But, you know, I wasn't sure for part of that time if I wanted to. I was afraid, you know, of...
Or gun shy.
Well, afraid of, like, maybe it was a selfish decision to come back when I had a family and, you know, kids dependent on me. Why would I go back and take those kind of risks again?
Yeah.
But, you know, I don't even... I know you know who Jim Mullen is.
Sure.
And,
the applesauce guy.
Sure.
Yeah.
And his wife, Athena.
Now, did he get shot? Is that he was injured?
Jim got shot, yeah.
Okay.
And he was shot I was actually in the police academy.
Yeah.
And I remember that night because I lived up north at the time, not too far from where that shooting took place. That was in Rogers Park, but or in Uptown, maybe? In Rogers Park, I think.
Yeah.
But anyway, that was a big thing for us when we were in the academy because... A guy got shot and kind of made it real.
The rest of his life.
And it made it real to everybody. We were running around shooting blanks at each other every day.
Right.
It was fun, and we were all 22 or 23. But that happened, and it was kind of wow.
And he's still in that situation. God bless him.
He is. He's an incredible guy.
Yeah.
And, amazing guy. And his wife Athena and I have gotten to be friends through the years, and. She was a police officer. She's now retired.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, she's great. I mean,
okay.
You got to talk about getting Athena and Jim on the show.
Yeah, I would love that.
Yeah.
He has a very successful applesauce company.
He does.
Yeah.
But I've never even told Jim, or I don't think his wife, this story, but when I was going to Northwestern, the night I got shot, I went to Stroger, and that's where I was initially in for a few weeks.
Yeah.
But when I got out of Stroger, I had to go back for follow-up stuff, and I went to Northwestern. And one day I was down at Northwestern seeing one of the doctors there getting cleared kind of to go back.
Right.
And,
go back on active.
And I happened to get in an elevator with Jim Mullen.
Oh, yeah. And had you met him before?
No.
Yeah.
And
So you're walking in the elevator and there's the cop who was,
It's him and you know, he had a guy, a nurse was always with him.
Sure.
And I introduced myself to him. I said, "Hey, Jim, I'm Pat Johnson. I'm a guy that was shot, you know, in May and 6 months ago or whatever it was at the time." And whatever I said, you know, you're really an inspiration.
Right.
Happy to meet you. And he said, oh, are you going back to work?
Yeah.
And I said, yeah, I'm actually down here finally getting cleared, and at some point I'll be going back. And he said, oh, what I wouldn't give to get back in a squad car.
Oh, wow.
And that kind of made me think at the time, like, you know, wow.
Yeah.
Any feelings I was having about maybe not going back or
right.
what I should do. And I wanted to go back then.
Yeah. And now I understand, are you like the guy, the go-to guy when a kid gets shot and they need another cop who's been shot?
I have done that.
Okay.
Yeah, and I've done that a bunch.
Yeah.
Talking to, you know, guys, these younger guys now when this happens to them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's, there's something unique about every incident, each guy that gets hurt, whatever
sure.
it is, shooting or a car accident, whatever, it's there's something to be said for a guy who's been through something as similar, trying to get somebody that's pretty similar kind of situation
yeah,
to talk to.
They've been there.
Yeah, it's
now,
true.
Now, 22 years on the force.
Yeah.
Is it, and you just said 2018 was a bad, bad year for police officers.
Yeah.
And I was telling you before, I think there's a culture in this society, an anti-cop culture. I think I blame the media. I blame other people as well. What do you think about that? Can you talk about it?
I don't know how much I can talk about it. I'm not going to dispute it.
Okay.
It's unfortunate. And, you know, I went into police work for the reasons, like, I think most guys go into police work, and it's not for any other reason other than you want to help people and protect people. And
I remember you
do what's right.
I read your thing. It said for the old people in the neighborhood, for the kids
yeah.
in the neighborhood. Yeah.
And it's not because you want to get rich or you want to get a bunch of stories for a book. Or
yeah.
I'm sure there's guys that have
yeah.
done that. But
there's better ways to get them. Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, and the I don't know. I don't know what people think or if they can actually believe that, like, the kind of villainization of policing.
I know. It's nuts.
It is. It is. And,
but we live in pretty dangerous times. It's a tough time to be a cop. There's no question about it. Right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And
that's one of the reasons we do this show.
Yeah.
We're here to salute and respect and honor the police and the firefighters and all first responders.
Yeah, and you know, I have a great job, and I love what I do, and I love what I do still every day, and I'm still interested in it and enthusiastic about it, and I know, you know, it's a job worth doing. You can never dispute that, no matter how negative things get.
Right.
But, you know, these young guys that are out in, you know, blue and whites and guys responding to 911 calls all night, those guys are, I mean, that's an incredibly difficult job now.
Yeah.
More than ever.
Yeah.
And I had a lot of fun back then, you know, when I was a young guy in a, you know, blue and white in the middle of the night running around. We had a blast. I think it's we did a lot of good work. We had fun. I just think now it's that would be a very hard job.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. And I, being a detective and, you know, having kind of a specialization, I have it a little better than most, so I'm happy. And I was, this reminded me tonight how cold this was. I mean,
couple of those guys out there tonight.
Oh my! And I saw a couple on the way down.
Yeah.
You know, some squad cars had cars pulled over. Actually, two different cars that they didn't have cars pulled over. They were pulled over helping like stalled motorists.
Yeah.
And they were out of the car and
the cops.
Oh my
yeah.
God! Yeah, the yeah. cops. And that's the kind of thing I was thinking about. Like, these guys are, what are they? Are they're just trying to help people, you know?
Right.
And this reminded me, I talked to my mom on the phone. I was heading down here, and she said, oh, make sure you have, I can't believe you're going outside. And I said, you know, Mom, I'm a grown man. And
yeah, I'm
I've been
experienced
a cop for a long time. And
uh-huh.
I used to have to go to work, like, you know, nights like this and be out outside uh-huh. all night and going in and out of people's houses. And
20 below.
Yeah. And she said, oh, Judd, make sure your phones are charged, and maybe you ought to bring your police radio just in case, you know. And it reminded me, I said, well, maybe it won't work. It's so cold.
Yeah.
One night, this is 20 years ago and or more, when I worked in the 9th District that has the stockyards, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And the old meatpacking plants and stuff are still there. And
yeah.
One night we're
back
driving.
The yards.
Yeah, my partner and I were driving around. It's probably 3 in the morning, and driving through one of these industrial areas, and we saw one of these meat processing places had a overhead garage door that was open about 18 inches or something. Like, it hadn't closed all the way, and we thought, oh, man, you know, there's burglars inside, and
yeah,
maybe somebody pried it open. So we get out of the car, and this was July or August, and it's probably 90 degrees and humid as hell, and we get out of the car and go inside, and we're walking around.
Did you slip under the
door?
We
slid under the door, and we're walking around with our flashlights looking everywhere, and it's like one of those places where Rocky used to beat the stakes. So we wander into some huge walk-in cooler.
Yeah.
And the door closes behind
us. Oh, no.
Yeah. Huh. And we walk in, and then we think, man, this feels great in here.
Nice and cool.
Oh, this feels fantastic. And then we try to get out, and we couldn't. We couldn't open the door, and our radios didn't work.
Oh.
It was so damn cold in the thing. And they were looking at each other like, this isn't great anymore.
Well,
you know,
we screwed up. Yeah.
We're going to freeze. We're going to die in here.
Yeah.
And luckily, some other cops had happened to drive down that street.
And they had the same
information. See our car. Oh, no, they saw our car sitting in the middle of the street with the windows down and nobody in it.
Yeah.
And they got out and saw the door to the meatpacking place open. And they're walking around, and we're banging on the door yelling for help.
It's 3 in the morning.
First time I almost died on the job. But I was only about 24 years old.
What'd they say? You knucklehead. Great story.
Yeah. It was great for about a minute. It felt great for a minute or so. But.
All right. We got to wrap it up. Yeah. Thank you, Pat.
Absolutely.
As always.
Yeah.
Come back. It was just terrific being with you once again. Folks, you're listening to Hibernian Radio. We are here to honor our Irish cops, firefighters, and paramedics. Please join us. Spread the word. Spread the word in the cop community.
I will.
We'll be right back after these messages from our friends.
There's no friend like an old friend. Southside cousins Mike and Dick Haggerty have been selling cars for over 45 years. They've been in business together since 1982, when they started their first store, where everybody in the old neighborhood bought their cars. I go way back with the Haggertys. Mike's a Mount Carmel alum and Dick is St. Ignatius. Dick and Mike have been particularly classy to me over the years. Whenever I visit their showroom, it's old school. Buick GMC at 9301 South Cicero, or the Volkswagen store at 89th and Cicero, both in Oak Lawn. So do yourself a favor. Get to know the Haggerty family. You'll be delighted you did. I'm currently driving a used car I bought at Haggerty's. It's a gem. And when I think I got lucky, I have to tell myself, no, it's because Haggerty took good care of me. God bless him. Call him today at 708-423-5000, 708-423-5000, or go to HaggertyCars.com. Generations of Southside Irish have been happily driving Haggerty cars for generations. Visit Mike Haggerty Buick and GMC at 93rd and Cicero, and Mike Haggerty Volkswagen at 89th and Cicero. And tell them Hooley sent you. And if you're a first responder, you just might get a better deal than I did. When your family has suffered a loss, there's one family I know who will be there for you. Robert J. Sheehy & Sons Funeral Homes are third-generation, family-owned and operated. The Sheehy family has dedicated their lives serving families throughout Chicago and the southwest suburbs. The Robert J. Sheehy & Sons Funeral Home was incorporated in 1913 as a storefront at 76th and Halsted in Chicago. At the time, this was one of the few standalone funeral homes of its kind and was to be the first of many to come bearing the Sheehy name. The founder, Roger Sheehy Sr., was soon joined in business by his three sons, Roger Jr., Jack, and Bob. This trademark of service is evident 98 years later, as Bob and Jim Sheehy, third generation, own and operate two locations in Orland Park and Burbank. At Sheehy's, the name on their sign outside the funeral home means something. For them, it's very important that everyone be treated as if they were family, friend, or neighbor, as they very well could be. When my brother Willie died a few years ago, the Sheehys took very good care of our family. And you know, you never forget something like that. Their entire staff cares about each and every family they serve. Every detail is handled in a professional and personal manner. On a daily basis, the directors Bill Kiley, Mike LaRocque, and John Sullivan, and the rest of the staff take great pride in their work, serving families as if they were their own. Bob Sheehy will tell you, we pride ourselves on offering the highest level of professionalism with every family we serve. Robert J. Sheehy and Sons Funeral Homes, here for you since 1913.
McCann's Irish Oatmeal. We've been warming the hearts, minds, and souls of the most discriminating oatmeal lovers for over 150 years. From the family farm to your table, enjoy the whole grain goodness of McCann's Irish Oatmeal today, available at your local grocery store.
If you're looking for an office in the loop, you gotta check out Integrated Office Suites at 20 North Clark Street and 455 North City Front Plaza Drive in the NBC Tower. IOS has an entire floor in these two very prestigious buildings, and they offer the best in executive offices, virtual business offices, personalized phone answering, conference room and day office usage, administrative support services, and customized packages with fixed monthly invoices. Integrated Office Suites are convenient and very classy. So get in touch with our friends at integratedofficesuites.com or call them at 312-561-2300 and tell them Skinny and Hooley sent you. That's integratedofficesuites.com, 312-561-2300. You'll be glad you did. This is Mike Houlihan. I support Concern Worldwide. If you want to do something about global poverty, hunger, refugees, the unacceptable suffering of young children, if you want to reach people directly where the need is greatest, you should too. For 50 years, since its grassroots beginnings in Dublin, Concern has saved and changed millions of lives. It's been the proud, relentlessly compassionate face of Ireland to the world. Support Concern today at ConcernUSA.org. That's ConcernUSA.org. There is no more Irish thing you can do.
Hey, hi, everybody. Your old friend Mike Houlihan. That was a great conversation with Pat Johnson. And that's what the show is all about, is just terrific stuff. So spread the word, will you? Tell them that we're here. We're here to support our Irish firefighters, cops, paramedics, and all the other stuff that goes along with it. Now, I want to tell you, Billy, whenever I'm walking down Western Avenue and I look in the window of Ken's or Wrong's or Hart's or any of those great Irish saloons, and I see the ghost of my old pal Jimmy Goff through the mist, and he says to me, "Hey, Hooley, who died?" So, Goffy, Mary Margaret Babe Kelleher Burke, Babe Burke, beloved wife of the late Richard Francis Dick Burke, and the mother of Richard Francis Jr., Mary Margaret, Nancy Ann, and the Honorable Kathleen Marie Burke, well, her daughter is a judge, passed just this last week. She's the cherished daughter of the late Jeremiah Kelleher and the late Julia of County Cork, Ireland. Fond aunt of many nieces and nephews, Babe was a graduate of Mercy High School and Chicago Teachers College. She was a dedicated Chicago school teacher for over 45 years, most of that spent at Merrill Elementary School, where she taught virtually every grade and especially enjoyed the primary level students in first and second grade. She grew up in St. Francis de Paula Parish in the south side of Chicago. And after marrying Dick Burke, she moved to the Beverly area where they raised their four kids. She continued to live in her home, was an active member of St. John Fisher Parish for almost 60 years. She enjoyed longtime friendships with her neighbors, college friends, and teaching colleagues, lunching with them regularly. She had a great life. Babe Burke, God rest her lovely soul. Also, golf balls. Donard A. Lutze, this guy's only 45, passed away suddenly at the age of 45. Beloved husband of Catherine, father of Kira, Patty, and Liam, and the loving son of Anthony and Peggy of West Cork, Ireland. Loving uncle of many nieces and nephews in Chicago and West Cork, Ireland, is preceded in death by his brother-in-law, Ollie, who's a native of Capeen, County Cork. God rest his soul. Donard A. Lucy. 45, man. That ain't right. Also, Joan P. Hennessy, a native of County Limerick, Ireland, loving sister of Meda, Michael, the late Sister Helen, he had a sister who was a nun, late James, the late Mary, Anne, Kay, Tom, Sister Lucy, another sister, Patty, John, and Father Willie. Oh, a lot of religious in that family of Joan P. Hennessy. God rest her soul. She was the best friend of Joan Sauer. So say a little prayer for her, and then we're going to close up the crypt. So that's all I got this week, golf balls. Want to tell you folks, hey, you know, if you're looking for Irish American news, they've been bringing you the news important to the Irish community in Chicagoland for over 40 years. If you like mostly good news and information from all facets of the Irish community, check out the Irish American News. If you want to advertise or subscribe, call Cliff at 847-872-0700 or email Cliff at irishamericannews.com. And I want you to drop in and see our friends Mike Courtney and his wife Dawn at the Twisted Shamrock Irish Pub, 6462 South Central, one of the best Irish pubs in the Midway area. And Mike and Dawn will take great care of you. And thanks to them for their shout-outs. Shout-outs to our friends at Celtic Boxing Club, located in the Chicago South Side, Mount Greenwood, Beverly Hills neighborhood. The Celtic Boxing Club was founded in 1993 by Mike Joyce, a.k.a. Pickle, a Chicago attorney and lifetime resident of Chicago. His brother's running for mayor, Jerry Joyce, so you might want to vote for him. The club was started to give neighborhood kids a place to learn the art of boxing and offer a positive outlet. Drop by the Celtic Boxing Club at 3012 West 111th Street, 773-779-7266. Tell them Hooley sent you. And if you're headed over to Western Avenue tonight or any time this weekend, stop it and say hello to our friends Mary and Bernard at Barney Callahan's Irish Pub, 10618 Southwestern. It's a perfect Southside Irish bar, and there's always something going on. And tell them Hooley sent you. March 9th and 10th, they're having a big party. They're going to kick off St. Patrick's Day season at Barney Callahan's Pub. Fela is a celebration of Irish culture. This two-day event will showcase traditional Irish music and dance, workshops, food, and, of course, drink. Come join us at the pub where it all began. And you'll hear more about that as we get closer to that date. Also, we're very, on this show, committed to our friends in the Ancient Order of Hibernians. Division 59 and our pal Tim Noonan on the south side, but also Division 32 at the Irish American Heritage Center's meeting next Thursday, February 7th. It's a big meeting. I think I'm going to have my buddy Billy O'Connell come down and join new members and the old essential members. Come on down Thursday, February 7th at the Irish American Heritage Center around 7:30. I'll be there. Come on down. Ancient Order of Hibernians, Division 32. It's a great group of guys, and they do great work. What else has I got on here? Don't forget, coming up, the Southside Irish Parade Film Festival. Our pal Tim McSweeney is putting he's got a great movie this year, Black 47. Black 47 is going to screen on Saturday night, March 2nd. Now, this is a film I looked at for my film festival, but it was after the film festival. But I got to tell you, it's a great film. It's in Irish, but with subtitles. But it's a Western about the famine. I mean, the plot, everything is like a Western. It's about a guy hunting down the people who killed his family. It's just terrific. Black 47, of course, Black 47 is the year of the famine, so you want to check that out. It's at the Beverly Arts Center, Saturday, March 2nd. There's a pre-movie reception at 6 p.m. Say hello to our pal Tim McSweeney and his wife Julia and his daughter Maeve, former Rosa Trolley. Okay, I think we can take a break here, Billy. We'll be right back after these messages from our friends.
There's no friend like an old friend. Southside cousins Mike and Dick Haggerty have been selling cars for over 45 years. They've been in business together since 1982, when they started their first store, where everybody in the old neighborhood bought their cars. I go way back with the Haggertys. Mike's a Mount Carmel alum and Dick is St. Ignatius. Dick and Mike have been particularly classy to me over the years. Whenever I visit their showroom, it's old school. Buick GMC at 9301 South Cicero, or the Volkswagen store at 89th and Cicero, both in Oak Lawn. So do yourself a favor. Get to know the Haggerty family. You'll be delighted you did. I'm currently driving a used car I bought at Haggerty's. It's a gem. And when I think I got lucky, I have to tell myself, no, is because Haggerty took good care of me. God bless him. Call him today at 708-423-5000, 708-423-5000, or go to HaggertyCars.com. Generations of Southside Irish have been happily driving Haggerty cars for generations. Visit Mike Haggerty Buick and GMC at 93rd and Cicero, and Mike Haggerty Volkswagen at 89th and Cicero. And tell them Hooley sent you. And if you're a first responder, you just might get a better deal than I did.
McCann's Irish Oatmeal. We've been warming the hearts, minds, and souls of the most discriminating oatmeal lovers for over 150 years. From the family farm to your table, enjoy the whole grain goodness of McCann's Irish Oatmeal today, available at your local grocery store.
There's only one Irish pub in the Chicago River, and that's Lizzie McNeil's at 400 North McClure Court. We spent a lot of time there, taping the Hibernian radio show at Lizzie McNeil's every Wednesday night. You can escape the hustle and bustle of Navy Pier and relax at Lizzie McNeil's. Our old pal John Wren is your host. Please say hello when you stop by for one of their ice-cold brews in an authentic Irish pub. One visit and you'll be calling it your hometown hangout. We've been hanging at Lizzie's for going on 10 years now, so join us. When the weather gets nice, they have two outdoor patio areas where you can take advantage of the sunshine and a cafe menu of salads, sandwiches, and appetizers. Lizzie's also has a great private party room that's perfect for birthdays, graduations, and most nights at Lizzie's you can meet the elite of Chicago's Irish-American community. So stop by Lizzie McNeil soon, right by the river, and tell them you were sent by your old pal, Hooley. Thanks. With a history going all the way back to 1896, the International Union of Operating Engineers has continued to protect workers and their families with loyalty and brotherhood. Local 150 has continued to thrive through economic booms and busts with careful training and aggressive organizing. Under the leadership of President and Business Manager Jim Sweeney, Local 150 has implemented programs and action plans to create work, protect benefits, and keep members working. And they've been helping the Irish-American community of Chicagoland for just as long. The Hibernian Radio Show is proud to be associated with Jim Sweeney and Local 150, and we salute the continuing efforts of the International Union of Operating Engineers and their support of Irish and Irish-American families now and in the future. Thanks to Local 150.
I was 18 years old when I went down to Dublin with a fistful of money and a cartload of dreams. Take your time, says the father, stops brushing like hell, and remember all's not what it seems to be. For there's fellas who'd cut you for the coat on your back, or that watch that you got from your mother. So take care, me young buckle, and mind yourself well, and would you give this wee note to me brother? At the time, Uncle Benji was a policeman in Brooklyn, and me father, the youngest, looked after the farm. And a phone call from America said, send the lad over, and the old fella said, sure wouldn't do any harm. For I spent my life working this dirty old ground, for a few pints of porter and the smell of a pound. And sure, maybe there's something you'll learn, all you'll see, and you can bring it back home, make it easier on me. So I landed at Kennedy, and a big yellow taxi carried me and me back through the streets and the rain. Well, me poor heart was thumping around with excitement, and I hardly even heard what the driver was saying. We came in the Shore Parkway through the flatlands in Brooklyn, to me uncle's apartment on East 53rd. I was feeling so happy, I was humming a song, and I sang, "You're as free as a bird." Well, the short in the story, what I found out that day was that Benji got shot down in an uptown foray. And while I was flying my way to New York, poor Benji was lying in a coal city morgue. Well, I phoned up the old fella, told him the news. I could tell he could hardly stand up in his shoes. And he wept as he told me, go ahead with the plan, and not to forget, be a proud Irish man. So I went up to Nellie's beside Fordham Road, and I started to learn about lifting me low. But the heaviest thing that I carried that year was the bittersweet thoughts of my hometown so dear. I went home that December 'cause the old fella died. I had to borrow the money from a fella on the side, and all the bright flowers and brass couldn't hide the poor wasted face of me father. I sold off the old farmyard for what it was worth, and into me bag stuck a handful of earth. And I boarded a train and I caught me a plane, and I found myself back in the U.S. again. It's been 22 years since I set foot in Dublin. My kids know to use the correct knife and fork. But I'll never forget the green grass and the rivers as I keep law and order in the streets of New York. Na na na.
Get me out of here.
So deep, deep.
All the way up to 93rd Street.
Get me out of here, please.
Across the tracks where they only spoke Yaki Dak.
Oh.
And the people barely survived on a strict diet of crunchy bunks and bamboo.
Hey, man, you want another drink?
Yes.
Can I get you two?
This yeah. is almost 70 years we're talking.
70 when years?
The what?
Oh.
Something entered his cranium.
His cranium?
And wormed around his frontal lobes and took him to a state of mind.
Mind.
Been placed on the other side of bunkers.
Welcome.
A crazy, silly screech.
Have a seat.
Known as Hooli Town.
Hooli Town.
Welcome to Hooli Town. Don't stay too long, though.
How come?
Because you might not come back. Welcome to Hooli Town.
Why, thank you.
And you're welcome.
Yeah, welcome to Hooli Town. That's my old friend Greg Holloman from Strangers with Candy. I want to thank him because he did a bang-up job on that. And we're in Hooli Town, and you know what? It's a little cold in Hooli Town tonight. What is it, 27 below or something like that? It's so cold that the politicians have their hands in their own pockets. Squirrels in the park are throwing themselves against electric fences. It's so cold, dogs are wearing cats. You know what? It's so cold when we milk the cows, we got ice cream. It's so cold I chipped my tooth on the soup. And I got out of the car today. You got to kick a hole in the air just to get outside. Okay. Hey, speaking of which, we got a police detective on. What do you call an alligator detective? An investigator. Why'd the scarecrow win an award? Because he was outstanding in his field. Ham Sandwich walks into a bar and orders a beer. Bartender says, "Sorry, we don't serve food here." I love that one. And what do you call a fish without eyes? Fish. Okay. You know, one of the things Yeah, Billy Wooten did not appreciate those hilarious jokes. But my old pal PJ O'D and I and his lovely wife Mary went on a little excursion a couple weeks ago, and I was going to wait for them while PJ had his cataract surgery. And so I'm in the hospital, you know, waiting for PJ's 92 years old, God bless him. And they gave me some magazines to read. just classic magazines, Ireland's Own. They gave me the Christmas issue and another issue. But in the back of the magazine, you know, I'm reading it, they have you know, kind of a advice for the you know, it's like a matchup for Irish characters. You know, like here's a Irish single girl, she's in her early 50s. She loves the GAA music, walks cinema with, what's that? See, they all have these, what do you call them, acronyms, and you're not. VGSOH means very good sense of humor. And I went, that sounds kinky, VGSOH. SD means social drinker, so don't get carried away. NS, non-smoker. What's the other one? ABL. Married but looking. Oh, MBL, married but looking. Anyway, you got to check these out because most of the people are in these little pen friends. And these people aren't using the internet. These are people who are still sending stamps and letters. And basically, there's a lot of old Irish broads, or excuse me, ladies, looking to hook up with Kilkenny gentlemen and stuff like that. But they're just hilarious, you know, caring, kind man, a gentleman, genuine, mid-60s, lots of interests, walking, outdoors, music, sports. Has his own house and car. A little lonely, it says. SD, that means social drinker. WITIF, I don't even want to know what that means. Honest, genuine. He's seeking, oh, he's looking for an honest lady for a partner. Anyway, we're having a blast here. Once again, come back and see us next week on Hibernian Radio. Our guest next week is Ray McInerney, Chicago police officer. And so glad that you're all listening. Hey, check out the podcast. We're on every, usually by Monday, you get the podcast at HibernianRadio.org. Thanks so much for listening. God bless you all, and we will see you later. Bye. And I started walking. I just buckled up my shoes.